All right, this is Andrew. I'm here at episode 148 with one of our live Ignite Wire episodes here. I'm sitting here at Ignite Atlanta. This is the first day, about a little bit after lunch, because you haven't had a chance to have your lunch yet.
Not
you?
Yet.
Okay, we'll make this quick.
Don't talk. I have enough reserve. Last a couple of weeks.
So I'm sitting here today with Vittorio from Microsoft. We're going to talk a little bit about Azure AD, Azure Active Directory. I know you're Mr. Identity, Mr. Cloud Identity.com, actually, right?
I did buy the domain when it was still non-suspect times.
So I know there's been a lot of stuff. This is one of the most changing stuff in terms of innovation and things that you guys are doing. I saw in the keynote today that Azure AD is serving up 1 billion authentications a day. It's a ridiculous amount of load and demand that you guys have, serving everything in Azure, serving Office 365, and then doing a bunch of the federated stuff too, of people who are on-prem. I guess, you just tell me a little bit about yourself. Introduce yourself to our audience and people who aren't familiar with Vittorio.
All right. Well, you're lucky.
No.
So, my name is Vittorio Bertocci, and as you can hear from my accent, I'm based in Redmond.
from New Jersey, right?
Of course. Precise in New Jersey. I actually joined Microsoft in 2001 back in Italy, and there I was working as a consultant with mostly financial and telco sector. And at the time, the web services were just starting, and I was helping a lot of customers to integrate with IBM and others. At the time, it was like new, that there was this interop thing. Mm-hmm. And then when Corp decided that they wanted to integrate those capabilities directly in .NET 4, .NET 3, 3.5, then they looked around to see who had hands-on experience, and I was among those. And so despite of my accent and my long hair, they flew me to Corp, where I started working there, and first in evangelism, for, again, distributed system enterprises and similar. And then I focused more and more on identity, and then I ended up in the product team. And now it's been about a few years that I am in the product team, where I look after developer experience. I am one of the PMs in the developer experience team, and I specifically own the libraries for .NET and the libraries for JavaScript.
Okay, so the adal.js that people have, we use for like Angular.
Right.
I think Matt Veloso did one for one of the other frameworks for Ember. I think he used that too, right?
Yep. And together with all those things, I also in general take an overall look so that also the libraries on the other platform remain consistent, coherent. So that if you learn in one language, you don't have to relearn completely in another language. And then I broker relationships between my team and Visual Studio, Azure, various other developer tools that need identity somehow.
Right, right. Everything needs identity. Almost, not everything, but I guess a great number of applications today, and both so much stuff on Microsoft's platform, Intelligent Cloud. I mean, AD is always like the cornerstone, centerpiece of all of it. So
I'm biased, but I absolutely agree, of course. We are on a critical path of everything, which is good, which is bad.
It's a lot of responsibility.
It is a huge, crushing responsibility.
Yeah, I've always been curious, and I know you're not going to share all the stuff that you guys do, but I mean, with that much, with identity being such an important thing, with so many companies you hear left and right, like Yahoo, even last week, of companies having identity stolen, their customers' identity stolen, it's got to be such a huge just responsibility and burden, and the number of resources that you guys have to dedicate on making sure that everything is not only protected and tight, but you're just constantly standing there watching guard. And
it's huge. It's huge, and I only overhear about this because being on the developer side of the house, I'm less involved in that part. But I know that is like one very, very large effort, which is an arms race. It's a constant being in guard. And in fact, on the identity protection side of the house, that's probably the place where you see the most innovation happening today. Like the fact that you now go through a service that can share all this intelligence across the board from an enormous corpus of data, or also with a digital crime unit in Microsoft, that can make it so much more effective. And it's all needed, because as you can see, the bad guys are also evolving. So it's literally an arms race.
It is. I mean, it's funny that you also see two companies talking about how they feel like they want to keep their stuff on-prem because they feel like things are more secure, they're more protected. And I mean, I get that there's different reasons for doing that stuff, but it's always, I've had people in classes I've taught and they bring that up, and I turn right around and it's like, so do you think that you have the resources that you dedicate in your organization, no matter how big you are, even a Fortune 500, Fortune 100, that a company like a Microsoft or a Google or an Amazon, that they have to be able to, that that's, if AD gets compromised, like the faith in the Microsoft cloud really is just going to get, it's going to take a huge shot. So that's a big responsibility.
Oh, yeah. These kind of mechanism always remind me of like just after 9/11, that lots of people stopped flying and they started driving everywhere. And we know that in general, flying is far more safe than driving.
Sure.
And so, like, paradoxically, because of this kind of paranoia, far more people died because, like, driving more just linearly led to more deaths tied to traffic.
Play the numbers, yeah.
But you have illusion of control because you say, well, I'm behind the wheel, so it's like, yeah, you're not necessarily as qualified as the pilot going on a fixed route.
Yeah.
But anyway,
that's
human nature.
Oh, totally. It totally is. So, hey, you know, here at Ignite this week, I wanted to catch up with you on a couple things that I know that the AD team has been working on. I know one of the big things that you guys have had on your plate that we just saw come out, I guess, in the last week or 2 weeks, was Azure AD now making it to the, do you guys call it the new portal? Do you call it the portal, the old portal? I call it IBs every once in a while, but I know that nobody knows what that means outside of Redmond.
In Redmond, everyone calls it Ibiza. Yeah. But I think that in general, we just call it by value, so okay. portal.azure.com.
Okay, so just the domain.
So when I talk to others, I try to resist like the new portal, also because the
2 years old
portal is also new, because like before that they were the Silverlight portal, and instead the one that is now old is the HTML5.
So the same problem.
Given that we've been in this time so long, like saying new can be misleading. Yeah. So portal.azure.com is what I usually use in public.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So that just, I remember seeing a preview of that like a year or so ago, but that was awesome. We saw that news hit and everyone was just like, oh, this is, now I don't, it removed a huge thing. It seems like I always had to go to both portals because I was always in Azure AD.
Yeah.
But it was, I wanted to use the new one, the Blady interface. But hey, this is great. We've got it now. So, I mean, that's in preview right now. Is that correct?
It is in preview. So, like, you can expect there's still little adjustments here and there. But I already use it as my primary portal for that. And in fact, one of the things that I love the most is that not all of my test and development directories are associated to Azure. I have some of them that just came straight through Office or similar. And now with a new portal, I can just sign into the portal with any user from my directory without having to associate the user that I use to an Azure subscription. So especially for developers on the Office world, that's going to make a whole difference.
It's going to make it a lot easier, yeah. That's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. I know another big project you guys have had that's been ongoing has been the convergence, or bringing together what we know as Azure AD identities or org IDs, and then live IDs or Microsoft accounts, and kind of not so much bringing them together, but at least bringing the authentication story for that together. Right?
Well, the long term is like tectonic plates of continents that eventually merge. So that's the goal. But we have various stepping stones, and one of the stepping stones is exactly what you just said, having one single developer experience, so that you have one portal for registering apps. You register only one app, and it's available on both sides. You only have one set of libraries that work across the board, and you have one set of protocols, which is consistent.
Right.
And the way in which it is achieved today is by having a new portal, by having a proxy, SDS, which lives in front of both systems, so that depending on the user that you enter, it will direct you to MSA or directly to AD, depending on the need of a specific user. But eventually, all this is going to merge.
Right.
So right now, you'll when you take the fork, you see an experience which is rendered in MSA style or AD style. But in the end, it's all going to be the same. And also on the back end, we have we write on both sides on the both data stacks. So again, from a developer perspective, it's already one single service.
You see just the one. So when I'm building an application and I'm getting a token, I'm getting one token from that one service, and it doesn't matter if it really originated from one service, but it doesn't matter if it did that by using the identity from Azure AD or from Microsoft accounts.
That is exactly right.
Right. So it's interesting to see how Microsoft is moving more to taking the consumer-based services they had and moving them more towards the more enterprise services, and just having a consumer kind of facade to it, kind of like how like Outlook.com went over to, is now on like Exchange and Office 365, but it still looks like Outlook.com, but it's not like its own separate mail experience, right? It's like we maintain one thing, it's just Exchange. Same thing with identity.
Well, it's in general, I think that there is, like, of course, I cannot say anything on the office side of the house because that's the office thing, but in general, I can see that there is this push for rationalizing and providing a as uniform as possible experience and especially cognitive model for the developer so that you don't have to continually in your head have this flowchart in which you decide if you want to go left, if you want to go right. As much as it makes sense, having one single surface makes sense. In fact, another big convergence effort, which is not necessarily on the consumer business axis, but is on like general services axis, like the Microsoft Graph, which individual resources, which normally had their own hierarchy of entities, now more and more are faceted in front of one single entry so that you can get one single token, you can ask for the same set of scopes which deal with all of them. When you make a queries, you can actually associate things that are part of the same tree as opposed to, again, do math in your code for mapping what this entity means in this other tree of entities. So it's going to be a huge simplification and it's going to open up a number of very interesting scenarios.
Oh, sure, yeah. So, well, in doing this too, I mean, let's say I'm a developer and before I was using something, I was using ADAL, I was using Azure Active Directory Authentication Library, right?
Correct.
Okay, it's a mouthful.
I know.
So I know that, and I know that that model, that ADAL model, is tied really to Azure AD and not to this whole convergence model as much. But back at the Build conference earlier this year, you guys talked a little bit more about a new library that you released, and I believe it was developer preview or preview at that time.
Yep.
That you were using.
So it still is in preview.
Okay, still in preview. Okay.
So the new library is like a similar name, MSAL, which stands for Microsoft Authentication Library. And it deserves a new name because it doesn't only work with AD, but it also works with Azure AD, with MSA, with Azure AD B2C, and with ADFS eventually.
Mm.
And but in fact, if you look at the object model is very similar to ADAL. Like if you developed with ADAL and you develop with MSAL, you'll probably have a feeling of like a burden has been lifted from your shoulders. Mm. Like it's a similar model, similar primitives, but it simply incorporates a lot of the learning that we had through a few years of a lot of people using ADAL in multiple contexts. And earlier you said, exactly the core of it. Mm-hmm. Whereas ADAL was specifically tied to the concept of directory, and all the primitives revolved around that. Mm-hmm. Like you started writing your code by always saying, here there's the tenant, the Azure AD tenant I want to work with.
Right.
And then you'd have this tenant dot do something for me. And this was a very directory-centric approach. And for companies that write software that don't know in advance what the directory their work is going to be, like classic ISV, like Office 365 itself.
Sure.
Like when we code Office 365, we don't know yet if Contoso or Fabricant are going to use it.
Right.
Whereas ADAL was really tied to like this line of business model in which you're writing an app for your own company, so you already know what is the directory. So we basically flipped this concept on the other way. And so now when you are in MSAL, the main primitive is no longer the directory, it's the application. So you start and you say, you declare the kind of application you want to write.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm writing a native client, a mobile client, I'll have a public client application class. If I'm on the service side and I'm creating a website, then I'll be creating a confidential client app. And then I do application dot do something for me.
Gotcha.
And this is enormously simplified. Like before, every time you made a call for getting a token, you had to specify all the parameters of your app. Instead, now you specify them in your first object, and then when you ask for a token, you just only have to talk about that operation.
So this is the thing you're talking about with the what's it called, the dynamic scopes, where I'm able to ask for permissions as I'm using the application. I'm saying, well, now I need this and now I need this. I don't need to get everything all up front to clear all that.
That's another big advantage of a new system in which, whereas before you had to declare in advance everything, now you still can and say that you don't want to pop many windows to the user. Like if you already know that you need five permissions, you can just use the same mechanism as before. But whereas if before you wanted to add something, it was very cumbersome to do so, now it's extremely easy. You just ask for a new token, with the new scopes, and Talk Contextually will just pop out the dialogue. We'll give the user a chance to give consent for the new scopes, and then it will be done.
Right. And if you wanted to go get that stuff up ahead of time, you can do that. That's just how you program your app.
That is exactly right.
I ran into this a lot when I was using... that's referred to as the V2 app model, right? Where
yep.
we have the dynamic consent.
You know, exactly.
Okay, so when we were doing the V1 app model, I remember I had a lot of customers I worked with that they want to build an app, but they want to have kind of like the trial version that was it would to be able to establish a trust, have the customer establish a trust with the application. And so they only wanted to get read permissions to it and grant those read permissions. The customer felt easier just saying, well, if you're just going to be able to read my calendar or read my, you know, whatever access I'm giving you, I don't feel as like that's as much of a risk as I am going through and giving you right operations back to it. But then when they wanted to switch over and get the commercial app, they had to sell them. They basically sold them a totally different app, which really under the covers was the same code, but it was just one that had the different app registrations in there. So they had to maintain two app registrations.
Yeah,
It wasn't easy to like to revoke one permission and all that stuff. So.
It's not a good experience because when you have two different app entries and you accumulate all the consent that the user gave. On the first app.
Yeah.
And then once you get the new app, it's all new. Mm. Like the user, even if you know about that user, the user will see the consent page again. It's not a good experience. The new model at VC is much easier.
Does the new model support, this just came to my head, does the new model support like a timed consent? So if I said I wanted to give consent, like write operation consent for 24 hours, or like something that only has a certain amount of duration, does it support something like that today?
It
or?
Doesn't exactly do that. Let's say that once you give a consent, you have given it, okay. Until you don't revoke it, the consent is there.
Okay.
But what's happening is that if you want, you could give just the access token mm-hmm. that allow you to actually, let's say, take advantage of that permission. And in the new system, you can actually change the duration of the token. So I can give you just like an access token that lasts 5 minutes instead of 1 hour. And the refresh token, which is the thing that will allow you to keep getting more stuff, mm-hmm. you can decide not to ask for it. Like a normal in the new system, in order to get a refresh token, you have to also ask for the scope offline access,
so I can
which means give me a refresh token. Yeah. So if you omit that scope, then you'll be getting an access token of which you control the duration.
Mm-hmm.
And then once that thing is gone, you have to authenticate again. Then you still consented, so as soon as you authenticate, you'll get back a token.
Sure.
But potentially, you can just go and revoke if you want.
Gotcha. That's cool. I didn't realize you could do that. So I guess I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I'm curious, like, what you have, like, what do you see that's interesting more in this space, like, right now? Like, where are you guys going with Azure AD that you can share? What are you talking about at the conference this week that that you think would be interesting to our listeners?
So this week, I'll be focusing really on existing technologies, given that. I know that lots of people come to Ignite as a training moment, mm-hmm. like their bosses pay for their travel because we expect them to go back with new hands-on knowledge that can make them more productive.
Sure.
So in the two sessions that I'll do on building web apps and native apps, I'll focus on existing enterprise technologies.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll just give a glimpse to what's coming, but the bulk of it is going to be training, let's say.
Gotcha.
But I have colleagues instead that are talking about brand new stuff like the Azure B2C, the business to consumer,
mm-hmm.
which GA'd very recently, but it's still pretty new. So
yeah.
I think new and exciting and new stuff will be coming. I don't know how much we're going there for the same reason, because again, training training a conference.
Yeah.
But the B2C is definitely the area where I'm very, very excited about.
It's really interesting. And you explain B2C to our listeners if they aren't familiar with it.
So the idea is that whereas Azure AD is designed to help your organization to deal with its identity tasks from a business perspective, then Azure B2C is something which helps you to create an identity system for your applications that are meant for your customers.
Okay.
So say that you are a big airline and you want to set up all the system for dealing with and say frequent flyers, then the application that you'll build, be it mobile app or website and similar, will have to work with end users.
Mm-hmm.
So users that don't have a manager, that don't belong to a group. They probably already have their account with Facebook or Google or Microsoft account, and they want to be able to reuse it.
Mm-hmm.
Or perhaps they just want to create a new user in your system, but they don't want to be bound to all the various constraints that you have in an organization. Like, for example, if I create a new user in a certain domain, I will always end up with user@domain.com.
Sure.
Whereas if I am just a frequent flyer with Fabric Airlines, I just want my name.
Yeah.
I don't want to have a domain and similar. And then there are a number of operations that traditionally you'd have in the IT department, which instead I expect consumers to do on their own, like change password, declare their surname, their physical mail address, all of that. So Azure AD B2C is an offering which supports all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And supports these in a white label fashion so that you can decide to like customize the UI completely so that there is no sign of Microsoft whatsoever.
Mm.
But it still goes against our servers, even if the UI shows something else. So you get all the advantages in terms of security that you had from the other systems. And you get the fact that you rely on the same infrastructure, which, as you said earlier, has to be reliable because we bet the farm on it.
Sure.
And so this also allows us to keep extremely competitive prices because like we already spent the money for setting up infrastructure.
Yeah.
So this one is like something which is on top of it.
Yeah.
So it's exceptionally powerful. And there are like premium features that are associated to these that are not yet in the public, but they are like in private preview. And some of these features are like, again, extremely good productivity boosts that, again, make dealing with identity, dealing with multiple identity providers very, very easy. So if there would be only one area that I'd recommend to watch, I'd recommend watching that area.
Look at B2C.
Yeah. All right.
We can we'll have to bring you back on the show, maybe talk about B2C and have a lot more to do a whole episode on that
or
one.
Or we have colleagues that own the B2C area that would be, I'd be happy to do an introduction.
Oh, I'd love to do that. We'd love to do it. I have to follow up with you on that one. Okay, one last question. What does Vittorio like to do outside of work?
What's outside of work?
Oh, I was hoping you wouldn't say that. Yeah.
So whenever I have a chance, I like to travel.
Okay.
Like, before, when I was in evangelism, I was traveling a lot. Like now in the product team, I have less chance of it.
Hmm.
So every time there is a slightly longer weekend, take my wife and say, let's go somewhere. And I'm a foodie, so as you can see here. And then I read a lot. I read really, really, really a lot.
Yeah. What kind of books you read?
From like non-fiction, so okay. The classic Gladwell, Thinking Fast and Slow, or like the various, let's say, you know, divulgatives, I don't know how to say that in English.
Okay.
Like popular science, let's say.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
To science fiction and fantasy.
Okay.
I have less time for that, but occasionally for long flights, I pull my Kindle out and read them.
I've started to, in the last few years, I stopped watching TV as I was going to bed and started reading for 30 minutes before I went to bed. And it's nice. It helps you escape from what you were thinking during the day and just to drift off. It's got a nice little time built-in thing where you're sitting and writing in bed. It's time to go to sleep. You just kind of bounce me in the face. Oh, yeah, it's time to put that down now.
That's exactly how it works.
Awesome. Hey, thanks a lot for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
All right, great. We'll have you again sometime.
Thank you.